Okay, welcome everyone. Thank you for allowing me to share some Torah with you. So this season, we're going to give shiurim on the topic of mental health, different aspects of life, dealing with mental illness, mental health. How does halacha deal with sometimes the challenges associated with people who suffer from mental health, mental illness? So I think for the first session, we're going to talk about mental illness and the synagogue. And we're going to ask a few questions. And some of this is not only about what you should do in a certain situation, but we're going to go through the thought process. In other words, what are the halachic sources? Sort of how does halacha think about people who have certain different types of mental illness? And so we'll go through today. We're going to go through issues of can someone who is psychotic be counted as part of a minyan? We're going to talk about is someone with severe anxiety obligated to pray? And we're going to talk a bit about also is can someone with a cognitive developmental disability lead the davening? We'll try to define these terms a bit also because some people here are mental health people, some people aren't. So we'll try to define some of these terms and we'll try to, through this and the other sessions, we'll try to get a good understanding of mental health in general. So first of all, if we begin with the first source, the first source says this is from Mishnah in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, Perek Gimel Halacha Ches. It says Chereish Shoteh V'Katan Ein Motzin Es Harav Midei Chovasa. So someone who is a deaf mute and someone who is a shoteh, I guess, lacking mental competence, and a child cannot discharge the obligations for the masses, for others. Zaklal, this is the rule. Kol she'enu mechuyu badavar, enu motzi esarav midei chovasa. Anyone who himself is not obligated cannot discharge the obligation of others. I'm only speaking about shota today, because obviously, you know, chevresh, a deaf mute, there was a belief in the days of the Mishnah, or in 2,000 years ago, that those who were deaf and mute lack mental capacity. How that impacts today, when there are many people who are deaf, mute, who have mental capacity, it's a great question. It's a topic unto itself. It's not our topic today. Our topic is a shota. A shota, someone who lacks mental capacity, seems to be someone who's not mechuya bedavar, who's not obligated in a matter. My question is, what's the halachic, what's the legal definition of a shota, right? Someone who lacks certain capacity. So the Gemara says in Chagiga, Daf Gilmud Beis, Tana Rabbanan, Ezel Shota, who is considered a Shota, legally incompetent. Hayotze Yechid Yibalayla, someone who goes out alone at night. Anyone ever go out alone at night? Okay. So, what? One minute. Okay. This is a safe space and it's being recorded. Okay. So someone who goes out at night, again, in those days, it's probably very dangerous to go out at night alone. Halon beves hakvaro, someone who sleeps in a cemetery. That seems probably a little more awkward than the first, right? Vamakoreas ksuso, someone who rips clothing. Rav Huna says, Achi yuhu kulon bebas achas, yuchra mar afilu beachas behen. So there's a debate as to whether you have to do all three things to be considered a shota, or just one thing to be considered a shota. The Rambam, let me read one other source, and then we'll try to discuss a bit. The Rambam says, a shota, this is when it comes to the status of someone who can be a witness, right? You need someone who also has mental capacity to be a witness as well. And the Rambam in Hilchos Eidos, Perek Tes, Halacha Tes, says, a shota pasul eidos midat Torah she'edo ben mitzvos. A shota, someone who's legally incompetent, is invalid for a testimony from the Torah because he is not a person of mitzvos. He's not obligated in mitzvos. V'lo shota shu mahalech arum u'meshaber kelim v'zorek avanim bavad. And we're not only talking about someone who walks around unclothed, breaks vessels, and throws stones. Elakomi shenitrifa dato. But anyone who his mind has become disordered. V'nim says dato mishubeshes tamid bedavar min advarim. And someone who is consistently impaired. Avo pishu medaber v'shol. Keinyan bishar devarim, even though he speaks and asks questions appropriately in other matters, hareza pasul, he is considered disqualified. Uvichlau shotim yechashev, and he's considered to be a shota. I mean, it's not so, what is a shota, right? Someone who is walks around naked, who breaks utensils, who throws stones, someone who's mentally deranged, with the result that his mind is constantly confused, even though he converses and asks questions, so he's considered a shota. Now, the definition of the Gemara, you know, the question could be is like, sometimes you say, what's the definition of someone, right? What's the definition of something? You can have a definition, and then you could have symptoms of or evidence of that condition, right? In other words, it seems that the definition of the Gemara is symptom oriented, right? We're not saying it. Someone who goes out alone at night, so therefore he is someone who is mentally incompetent. That's a symptom, right? It's based on observable behavior. A shota is someone, and this is how the poskim generally understand this, that a shota is someone who manifests symptoms typical of someone who is insane or someone who is psychotic or someone who lacks the ability to distinguish reality from fantasy. That's generally how the poskim understand these examples. That the people who can't distinguish what is real, what is not real. In other words, if you think you just walk out late at night in those days, and it's totally fine, or it's totally normal to sleep in a cemetery, right? Or someone just destroys things. Again, you know, you can ask, sometimes there's a fit of anger, or, you know, so we have to see, you know, in what context does someone do this? But generally speaking, these are examples that the poskim understands. My understanding of psychosis is where you, the definition is where you believe or you perceive something that is not real and you're unable to recognize that it's not real, right? So I think an example is someone who's delusional. Someone, let's say someone to say, I believe that the government has implanted a chip inside your tooth to monitor you. Anyone ever hear, you know, to announce that? Okay? Or if you have hallucinations, if you hear voices commenting on your actions, if you have disorganized speech or thinking, if you have a severe reality misinterpretation. So these are all understood to be like a shota, someone who can't, and obviously, you know, there could be fine lines, or something could be gray areas, but generally speaking, the shota is someone who can't distinguish reality from fantasy. What's not psychosis would be, let's say you have a strong fear, you're very emotional, you're always on edge, you're always worried about people talking about you, but you recognize this might be my anxiety. In other words, if you experience a certain, you know, maybe an unusual feeling, an overly emotional feeling, but you realize, like, this is how I am, that's not psychosis. If you also, like, sometimes people have these grief experiences where they felt like, okay, you know, oh, I felt my spouse or my parent was there, you know, talking to me. But that's like for a transient, that's for a time being. You can also, someone can have intrusive thoughts. They could have OCD. They could have poor judgment. That's not psychosis. That's not a shota. A shota is someone who really cannot who's really detached from reality. And I want to, before I take questions, let me just read just how this plays out in halacha. Just want to point out source four says the Prima Gadim says that a shota, he cannot get an aliyah. And here there's a tshuva by Rav Moshe Sternbach in source five, She'ela litzarif leminyan adam im mara shechora. So let's say someone who has melancholy. So this is Rav Moshe Sternbach asks this question, and then we can maybe sort of see how this fleshes out, you know, in modern day halacha. So he was asked the following question in source five. Turn the page. Nishalti halacha ma'aseh ba'adam she'esh lo mara shechora. I was asked the question, someone who suffers from mara shechora. Da'ainu she'medavrim imo, the people speak with him. And most of the time he doesn't answer. Why? Because he's afflicted with melancholy. Even situations where he's obligated to respond. So he has no connection to worldly matters at all. So the question is, im efshel etzarfa l'minyan, can he be part of a minyan? Can he join a minyan? Right? In other words, like you think, oh, any adult can be part of a minyan, but a shoteh cannot be part of a minyan. So the question, can this individual be part of a minyan? So he says, v'hinei b'chagiga mavur simane shoteh. He says to the Gemara, the signs of a shoteh. V'mucha chasam, shafilo avid rak davar echa derech shtus, v'pikech b'shar dvarim, hu shoteh. So it seems, the conclusion seems to be the way Rav Moshe Sternbach understands it, that even if you don't do all the things that are listed in the Gemara, just even do one of those things. V'ayinu kishemafriya, means his behavior is disruptive. He cannot properly engage with other people. They distance themselves from him. And later authorities have elaborated this at length. This is the Lashon HaRambam. And he cites the Rambam that we mentioned. And we'll skip three lines. Even when it comes to one issue, Even if he's impaired with respect to one issue, he has a status of a shota, v'nira pashut, and it seems obvious, dahainu, shebazeh mufra b'maso mata nimanashim shehu mashuna. In other words, that he, even if because of his one impairment, his one delusional impairment, it affects his behavior towards others, so then he is considered a Mishuna. Even though some say that the Rambam is only speaking about testimony, he says no. The Rambam said if you're a shota, you're not a ben mitzvos. So he wants to say that this individual is not counted as a minyan. Let's turn the page. Turn the page here. V'shamati b'shem hagon Rav Chaim Brisker. That Rav Chaim said that the descriptions in the Gemara and Chagiga are only manifestations, or as mentioned, symptoms of the condition of being a shota. That he goes out alone at night, sleeps in a cemetery. Or maybe he becomes so agitated that he tears his clothing. And he says, or worse than that, his intellect does not develop at all, such that he loses what is given to him like a child. And then it says, uvenidon shelefaneinu, in our situation, eino on elanashim klal, he doesn't respond to people at all. Vlomitragesh me'asviva, he does not react. He's not affected at all by his surroundings. Av shelishar dvarim hu ben das. Even though, with respect to certain things, he is considered intellectually competent. So, Roy Lomar Shadino Kishota. So it seems that he is considered a Shota, and he's not counted towards a minyan. I'm going to read one more source, and then we'll summarize, and I'll take questions. The Aruch HaShulchan, right? He's end of 19th century, beginning of 20th century. Vichil Michal Epstein, source 6. Evan Ezer Simon Kuf Chaf Av Saif Yud Gimel. Bale Hamarash Chora. Those afflicted with melancholy, she'ein osim klum, dvarim shashigom. They don't perform any acts of madness. Rak yoshvim ba'atzavot. They're ba'atzvot. They're simply sitting in sadness. Urechokim mi'chaburat anashim. They're distant from people. Ve'in mevakshim le'achol. They don't want to eat. Uchshinosim lehem le'achol. And when they give them food, ochlim they eat. Ve'in matchim le'davar. They don't speak. Uchshishom also, and when they ask questions, oni ma'at dvarim. They speak a little bit. But they don't speak words of, they don't speak irrationally. So we need to think about whether they are of a status of a shota, in love or not. According to this reasoning, I don't think that this is madness here. This is depression. Depression is not shtus. And then obviously the court has to decide. So it seems that again, this is, I think, there was a scholar in residence here a few years ago, Rabbi Yoni Rodenzweig, who wrote this book on mental health and halacha. And again, the way he comes out with citing, you know, a lot of these sources here, he says that really it's someone who suffers from psychosis, where they're delusional. And at that stage, they're a status of shota. And when they're a status of shota, they're not chayv in mitzvos. And because they're not chayv in mitzvos, they would not count as a minyan. So that is sort of one type of category of mental illness and how halacha would view this individual. You got a question, man?
Yeah, I was wondering about dementia or Alzheimer's. Is that included in
Shoka? So, don't think so. We're going to talk about, that's more cognitive, right? Yeah, so we're going to talk about cognitive in a bit. So this is more of someone who's, this is psychosis. I don't know if I'll be able to cover everyone, but we're going to cover cognitive in a bit, okay? Cognitive might be a little bit different, okay? So that is sort of one category. And that's, I think, how halacha comes out here. Another one comes out, another question is, what if someone has severe anxiety? Are they obligated to daven? I mean, think about it. So first, yeah, what do you think?
I don't know, say the question.
Why, does it make you anxious? Why?
Severe anxiety should not stop them from being able to daven.
That should not be able to stop them. It should or should not?
Should be able to daven. What's the...
They should be able to daven.
Yeah.
Okay.
Unless the anxiety disorder is such that it's preventing them from daven.
Why would that be?
Okay, so...
A particular anxiety about daven.
So, okay, so let's say the davening brings up anxiety. Maybe when he davens, he feels, again.
So inadequate.
Whatever the case is, does that ever, I mean, this. But this really goes to the question of, you know, are you ever exempt from performing mitzvos? What do you think? Let's say, we all know, pikuach nefesh, a life-threatening situation. You know, you can set aside most prohibitions. Okay, we're not talking about life-threatening prohibition. Are there other situations where you can avoid performing mitzvos?
Is there an issue of kavanah?
So right. So number one is maybe the person can have kavanah. We're supposed to talk about that also, right? That affects their kavanah. We're going to speak about that. So I think we actually spoke about last year we had this rabbah, source 7. It's in Hilchos Sukkah, and in Hilchos Sukkah it tells you if you don't have a mitzvah, you don't have an esrog, and the only esrog is really, really expensive. So the Rama is in Or Chaim Tafresh Nun Vav Sif Aleph. He says you don't have to spend more than 20% of your income to perform a positive mitzvah aser. He says for a low tase, then you can't, you have to be willing to give up everything not to violate a low tase, a prohibition. But to perform a mitzvah asay, if it's going to cost you more than 20% of your money, you don't have to spend on the mitzvah asay. Now, that's an interesting topic unto itself. But the question I'm asking about: so, what if it's going to make you sick? In other words, you don't have to spend a certain amount of money, right, in order to perform a mitzvah. What if doing this mitzvah will turn you into a chola, to a sick person?
You mean like if you're allergic to the lulav and you can't touch
or whatever? Not lulav, any mitzvah that you're going to get sick at. You're going to get, you're going to be sick. So, but not sakana nefashot. I'm talking about. So I'll give you an example. Look at source 8. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva, and he says, you see where we're going with this. In other words, can you excuse yourself from a mitzvah saseh? And then the next question will be, is mental health, is a mental illness considered a sick person? Right? I mean, that's what we're going to do. So if you look at, for example, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Or HaChaim, Chelek Aleph, Simon, Kufayin, Beis, Rav Moshe Feinstein says, Be'im mechuyav likanes b'choli, Bishvil kiyum mitzvos asay de shofar, where he says, Rav Moshe Feinstein says, are you obligated to put yourself in a situation where you're going to become sick to fill the mitzvah of shofar? So he says, Nishalti becha cheyachola b'machlas shtus v'hu b'beis hacholim. The person in the hospital, and he was healed. Aval arofi momim shetarach liyos sham od eza shavuot tachas hashkachasam. So the doctors say, you need to stay in the hospital so that you can heal. He thinks he's healed. He wants to get out of there. And doctors say, you need to spend more time in the hospital to be healed. We need to watch you. So let's say there's no volunteer service of someone coming to blow shofar in this hospital. It's not near any Jewish community. And so he has two options, right? Either go home and possibly get sick, right? And because the doctors say it's not a good idea for him to go home. But you can hear the mitzvah of shofar. So this is a situation where you're balancing, right? Being sick, potentially, and the mitzvah of shofar. So let's assume it's not pikuach nefesh. Let's assume it's not pikuach nefesh. There many times people go to the hospital, and Ramosha doesn't talk about this, but he doesn't bring in the pikuach nefesh. You can also imagine that sometimes not everyone who goes to the hospital is in a status of pikuach nefesh. Sometimes it could be very broad, and maybe he could have gone that way, but Ramosha Feinstein says... So get sick. I just have what's written in front of me. So I don't know the details. But what's interesting is Ramosha doesn't talk about pikuach nefesh. You can imagine a scenario where someone said, it's best for you to stay, but he doesn't mention pikuach nefesh. We could think of a situation, right? I'm sure we can think of a situation where it's not pikuach nefesh. Okay. So Ramosha says, you don't have to take him out of the hospital. That he says that for a potential loss of money, you also, if you're going to lose more than one fifth of your money, you don't have to. You also don't have to give that up in order to fill a mitzvah saseh, a positive mitzvah. So I don't know, but he says basically, certainly a person cares more about his health than 20% of his entire income. Okay, that's a questionable. But the point, maybe, it depends on health, whatever. But the point is, Ramosha basically says, his point is that if you don't have to lose a lot of money, rather than not perform a particular mitzvah, so I say a positive mitzvah, you also, if it compromises your health, you're allowed to not perform a mitzvah, so I say, if it will compromise, if your status of chola. Now, what's a chola? Chola is, generally speaking, someone who is bedridden and someone whose entire body aches. Again, not just someone who's like has a sniffles. So we can define what that means. But bottom line is, this is Ramosha Feinstein. Ramosha Feinstein is of the opinion, and this is probably the majority view. The majority view is, among the poskim, is that you are allowed to forego a positive mitzvah for your health if you're a status of chola, even if you're not a chola sheyesh bo sakana, even if it's not pikuach nefesh. There is a minority view, that's the Maram Shik in Source 10, that he bases it off the Shulchan Aruch, where it says that if you don't like wine on the four cups of wine, you don't like to drink wine because it's harmful to you or you hate it, you still should drink it on Seder night. And the Maram Shik says that, he says, if there's no danger, assuming there's no sakana, then he would seem to say you would have to drink the four cups of wine. Meaning, as long as, even if you would be in a state of chola, it's harmful to you, but not sakana, anything less than sakana, you would have to drink the four cups of wine. A different way to understand this. So what I'm telling you is that, I'm telling you just to give you the halachic landscape, is that the Rama is clear. You don't have to spend more than 20% of your income in order to fill a positive mitzvah. And then there is a dispute whether you can forego a positive mitzvah for if you're in a state of chola, state of sickness. And there we have, again, there is a debate about this. The dominant view is like Ramosha Feinstein, that you can forego a positive mitzvah for the purpose of if you're in a state of chola. Now, what's a chola? Now, in source, now, Rav Herschel Schachter quotes this a lot, the status of a chola. In source 11, Shulchan Aruch says, chola shenafo machmas chol yol mishka b'mo sakana. The chola is someone who, he's bedridden. And the Piskei Tshuvos says that included this, Rav Schachter has said this a lot, that the definition of a chola is someone, it's in source 12, understanding this Shulchan Aruch, he says that, that sheyesh lo in the second brackets in source 12, what it means that you're a cholef if you're bedridden, or your entire body is nechlash koguf, or your entire body is weakened. And here the brackets shedu yachol lasos pulasov v'hit stracha yusov kehergelo. You can't carry out your normal activities. Machmas tirdas haseil vatzar v'chusha, because of the pain. Meaning, you're not a chole. If you can function normally, but you're in a lot of pain, you're not a chole. If you can't function, you're not in bed, but you can't do your daily activities, your regular activities, because you're in so much pain. What does it mean that your whole body is weakened? It means you can't function normally. Okay? So then you would be exempt from a positive mitzvah, according to Rav Moshe Feinstein. And what that would mean, would seem to be, if you follow Moshe Feinstein, that it would seem that if you're following Rav Moshe Feinstein's view, that if you're in a state of severe anxiety, and maybe by davening, again, you want to be very careful. Like just say, obviously people can use this as that, I never want to daven. But I'm saying there are grounds to say if by davening, let me be clear, you want to get guidance from a mental health expert, speaking to a rabbi, whatever the case is, and not just simply, okay, I don't feel, I can't concentrate so well, I'm feeling bad about myself, so I don't want to daven. But I think there are grounds to say that someone who suffers from severe anxiety, and that doesn't allow the person to function normally, and that is caused perhaps by prayer, by tefillah, there might be grounds to be leading. Let me read you what Rabbi Yoni wrote, so I don't have it in the sources, but when he writes in his book, if someone with generalized anxiety disorder experiences excessive anxiety due to the requirement to have full kavana during prayer. So this is about kavana, but it does not result in significantly impaired functioning afterward, they should try to recite one prayer a week with full kavana and verbalize all the other prayers without it. If it does result in significantly impaired functioning afterward and impedes their full recovery, they are exempt from praying. And he said, depression, if someone's, let's say, that they said, and he also writes this is quoted from the Chazon Ish in Genazim Veshut, source 13, volume 1, Simon Nun. He says, just as a little is good, a lot is bad, and too much anxiety does no good. My advice to you is to perform your service of the heart prayer while pouring out your soul once a week, and the rest of the prayer should be at a medium pace. Don't rush and make it a rote prayer. I was just Mincha Friday. Now, so this is about, if it's the kavana brings you tremendous anxiety, try not to give up kavana entirely. Try to have some notion, some semblance of kavana once in a while. But if someone, he writes, Rabbi Yoni Rosenberg writes, this makes sense, that if someone is in a state of depression, you might be exempt from tefillah. Although, in some instances, it might be good to pray. In other words, my point is, this is something to speak to a competent mental health practitioner.
This is all going to be very
No, I understand, but my point is that there is. I'm just trying to point out to you that it's totally legitimate if a competent mental health professional says that praying will bring out, create severe anxiety to the person. There are grounds to say the person should not pray. Now, again, it's probably better to do a little bit, to do something a little bit. You don't want to get out of the routine, but there might be grounds to allow it. At the same time, sometimes it might be good to pray. Also, he talks about moda'ani. Let's say what's moda'ani? You're grateful. You wake up every morning. So you're allowed to lie if you're not feeling grateful. I'm just saying, it's like a question. So some therapists would say that maybe it's therapeutic to lie, to express gratitude, to try to find good in your lives and to be thankful for it. What I'm just trying to share with you is that, I'm sorry, but this is the point, source 14, sorry. This is where he writes this. Someone with major depressive disorder is considered at the very least, this is Rabbi Rodenzweig, Yoni Rodenzweig, a cholash ein bo sakana. If getting up to pray interferes with the complete recovery, they are exempt from prayer entirely. And certainly praying with the minyan at the appropriate time, which are only drabbanan requirements. In many cases, though, the clinically depressed require routine and daily goals to be met, so they can get up in the morning, and require them to pray with a minyan. When a person truly has no ability to get up and pray, obligating them anyway might increase feelings of shame or despair and deepen their depression. Such a person should be told that they are exempt from prayer until they are clinically stable, along the lines of chalol Shabbat achad, violate one Shabbos, so you can observe many Shabbatot harbe, so you can observe many Shabbatot, and when they are better, then they will resume praying. Okay, so that's another interesting situation where, yeah, sometimes tefillah, don't do it. So that might be how, not only when we're dealing with it, my point is not, we don't only have to get to a point and say they're suicidal, it's pikuach nefesh, it's life and death situation. It doesn't have to be a life and death situation. Again, it shouldn't just be someone doesn't feel like davening, so I don't feel like it, I'm anxious. But what I'm saying is there are grounds at times where someone could be, again, the halachic analysis would be that someone with a severe anxiety that they can't function normally would be in the category of a chole. According to Moshe Feitzit and others, someone who is in a state of chole may be exempt from certain mitzvos asei. And that's how you take the leap to that when it comes to prayer, if they feel it's therapeutic. Okay?
Has anyone ever approached you to discuss this from this perspective? They feel they're not in a position to be able to die?
Yeah, sometimes people have said that. Sometimes I've had some therapists have come to me and they've talked to me about some of these issues, uh-huh. about, and sometimes people come to you with OCD questions and prayer and other issues, no one's come to me saying they're psychotic, or no one's told me that other people are psychotic, but I'm saying someone else has not come to me and tell me that this person.
More common than an
correct, 100%. Yeah, no, I've gotten that much more. Yeah, that's correct.
So how is the OCD?
So we'll get to the OCD at the end. I have one more short piece about that. I think I may have spoken about that once here. I think I hear it, but we'll get to that at the end. The third piece that I want to get to is, can someone with a cognitive developmental disability lead the davening? So the truth is, right, so the definition is someone who, impaired intellectual functioning, right? It could be someone with impaired intellectual functioning, their thinking, reasoning, or problem-solving skills are impaired, or their adapted functioning. They have their daily living skills or their social interactions. Example, maybe someone with Down syndrome. I was focusing on that, but Mike, your question about the other side of it, Alzheimer's, the other side, may also come into play. Someone who has difficulty with abstract reasoning, but they understand maybe basic social norms and reality. In other words, they're not psychotic. They understand basic norms, but they have impaired intellectual functioning. Yeah.
So when I was in Eretz Yisrael, when I'm in Eretz Yisrael, the mini dominant, there's a Down syndrome colicum.
Okay.
Who goes up
good
every day. So my question is that something we should stop?
No.
No.
I'll tell you why. But we're going to get to it. I'm going to get to it. Yes, exactly. That's what I'm going to talk about. So there's something called, not a shote, I think a shote is psychosis, psychotic. A peti, pei tough yud. So that's source 15. I mean, what's peti mean? Fool? I don't know. But simpleton, maybe. Right. So what's a peti? Patam biyosis, shochet arach, hilchos edus, siman lamed hei seif yud. They don't recognize that things contradict each other. They don't understand things like other people understand. Those who are easily frightened or hasty in their thinking, those who are most insane, they are included in being a shelter. So a peti bioser, Someone who is extremely simple-minded is considered a shilta. Okay, that's the Shulchan Aruch. There's a Rambam also. The Rambam.
This is an additional category of shilta.
This peti seems to be included in a shilta, and the Rambam is similar to this language, and the definition is not altogether clear, but there is a discussion. The Chassam Sofer, I didn't bring the source here. The Chassam Sofer basically says that there is this category that's not psychosis, but he actually wants to compare it to a cheresh in those days. The Chassam Sofer is living in the 19th century, so someone who's deaf-mute, he's saying that they're not psychotic, but they're lacking certain intelligence. Again, whether that's true or not, it's a separate conversation. But he wants to say there's another category of someone who is, a peti, not because they're psychotic, but because they don't have the intellectual capability. And there's a question, what does that mean? Is it intellectual? Is it social? So there's something in halacha, the Gemara talks about, where let's say children, kids who are under a bar, bar mitzvah, and they you know, this kid brings, he brings some baseball cards. Someone says, I'll give you my candy for your baseball card, and they trade. So is this legally binding? In other words, are transactions from children legally binding? So this is a discussion in the Gemara, and there's something called onas hapeutos. So there's an age where a child, even if he or she's not bar bat mitzvah, it's considered like their transaction. There's some level of da'as, some level of understanding that it's valid, that the business transaction will be valid. And many poskim sort of use, and it's a question, what's the age? Is it 6, 7, 8, 9, 10? There's a lot of debate in the Gemara. And there's this kind of understanding that maybe even at a younger age, at least when it comes to business transactions, that they have enough das, understanding, to validate those transactions. And the poskim seem to apply that to someone who is, you know, a gadol is someone who has a certain physical signs of maturity, and there's also a presumptive intellectual signs of maturity, or intellectual maturity as well. So the question is, what is the, if someone has physical signs of maturity, what is the age necessary? So some poskim want to say, as long as they're onas hapeutos, at that age, if they have physical signs of maturity and they have onas hapeutos, then maybe they can be considered adults regarding all these things. And just to give you an example, I'll show you Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, the Mincha Shlomo Chelek Aleph Simen Lamedalet. He says, Chinuch Yeladim Mifagrim. It seems that the level of a child, I'm sorry, Nira Dekol Shu Mevin, he said the kids who have mental disabilities, as long as a child has, understand, he has knowledge like pe'utos. What's pe'utos? V'yodea shekadosh baruch hu nasa lanu ha-Torah. If a person who knows that God gave us the Torah, v'nachnu mekaymim mitzvosav, and we fulfill his mitzvos, t'shaper chashiv kvar das le'in kima mitzvos. That's what you need to know. You need to know that God gave us the Torah and we fulfill his mitzvot. He's considered das, when it has requisite das for observance of mitzvot. Uvigil legil yud gimel, when he reaches the age of 13, shana, harehu chashiv kigadol, he's achieved the age of majority of an adult. Umiyu, nevertheless, le'in onshim, when it comes to punishments, then maybe he's not. So he kind of equivocates here, a difference between punishments and mitzvot. And he says, only for when it comes to kiyum mitzvot, there is then as long as he believes, right, that God gave us the Torah and we observe his mitzvos, and he's 13, so then he is considered a gadol. Rav Moshe Feinstein, let me see, source 17, Aval peti, a peti, mi shehu dato kalishta. That's on two sides of the page, right, the Hebrew and English. Someone whose understanding is very limited. Shein maybe not dvarim kmo shehem. He doesn't understand things the way they are. Eveni odei lachag bein advarim shero lahavin tzorcham. He doesn't know. He doesn't understand things that they truly are. Behu begadlo kedas katan. And he is in some, even though he's an adult, his understanding is like a child. Yeshu kedas ben sheish. Some are like they're 6 years old. They have an intelligence of a six-year-old. Vishkam kepacho. Some are less. Awal dato hu kavuk mi madrega sichlo mitpateach tzas miatvel. But he has some. He has some understanding, some level of intellect, and it may develop a bit. And he says, "Aviyesh gam she'em itpachim atzmon." Some don't develop. Aval efshar shadechinuch b'limun yispatchu k'tzas. But it's possible that through education they will develop. V'nei shavadei chayavim b'mitzvos. They are obligated mitzvos. K'shehevi sarot v'heim b'nei yudgimel u'benot yudbeis. And they, when they're 12 or 13, when they have some level of understanding, then they are obligated mitzvos. I will tell you that Rabbi Mordechai Willig holds that when someone has, based on this sugya, based on this topic, he thinks onas hapa'utos is 8 years old. That's how he comes out. I mean, we're not going to learn the whole sugya, whole topic, but he's in practice, so he's talking about a Down syndrome kid. If someone has, again, Shol Zalman Orbach's determination is he believes there's a God who gave us the Torah. Rabbi Willig thinks is when he's the IQ of an 8 year old. For him, it's not social. There are some probably who think maybe it's also social. Question how to do that. But when someone has like an IQ of an 8 year old, and then maybe we can talk about even, you know, someone who's older also, same level, I mean, it's really a similar question. So that would be the determining factor for someone is considered a gadol. So again, we have the delusional psychotic, we have the someone who is lacking certain intellectual capacity, this is a very safe space here, and so these are generally the categories that halacha has in terms of saying if someone is obligated mitzvah. So it seems very much so that someone who is Down syndrome, many people certainly have the IQ of an 8 year old, and they would certainly be allowed treated as a gadol in every respect. And the final source I have here is this Rav Asher Weiss.
Where does this fall out in terms of reading the document?
So I would say that he would be able to. I'm saying he is considered a gadol once he has.
So a person of such intellect,
assuming he can read and do all the other functions, as soon as he can lead the davening, he would be allowed to do that. Yeah. In terms of OCD, I just have this last source of Minchas Asher, Rav Asher Weiss, where I think I taught this before, but this is someone who has OCD, and basically the doctors felt that it would be harmful. He always felt that he was like missing words, and he always wanted to repeat it because he had this anxiety. And the doctor said for him to be healed, you just gotta say the davening as you think, and just don't repeat anything. That was part of the treatment. That don't repeat anything. And here, Rav Asher Weiss thinks he goes to this analysis saying it's permitted. He goes to the analysis of reciting brachos. It's because it's a positive. It's tefillah. Is it positive or brachos? He went through analysis. Are saying brachos, is that a negative or a positive, right? In other words, is it forbidden to eat without a bracha, or is it a positive mitzvah to make a bracha? He comes out saying that you're allowed to tell the person that don't repeat, because it's for your treatment. And he quotes the Stipler, I should read the English here in source 18, that was happy when I saw that our teacher, the author of the Kilesh Yaakov, the Stipler, says the following. He says, I instructed him that he should pray from a prayer book, and whatever he had already passed should not be repeated under any circumstances, even if it's clear to him that he said it incorrectly or that he skipped words. It is clear that as a matter of Jewish law, he is not obligated to recite these words any longer. But you cannot explain this to someone whose nerves are stretching on this matter. Therefore, you must say to this person with great certainty and without offering any explanation, say there's no concern of transgressing a biblical prohibition. I cannot elaborate on it at any time. The person will ask you, Shai, well, why don't I have to repeat the words? Maybe I made a mistake. And let's discuss it. No. There's no iser. I'm the rabbi. You're not the rabbi. Okay? I know the halacha. You don't listen to me. And you don't have to repeat it. Now, sometimes also therapists have to do this also with their patients. That sometimes the patient is obsessing. Should I take this treatment or that treatment? And it's sometimes maybe the the mental health professional may want to collaborate with the patient and try to think what's the best type of treatment. And sometimes they're going to say no, because it's harmful for the patient to think that they, maybe this is right, maybe this isn't right. I'm the therapist. I know what I'm talking about. You came to me. You have to listen to me. And so the rabbi stated also, it's not an issur, but rabbi, what about this, this, this? I'm telling you, it's not usur, and you should keep on doing this. And that's what he says. One should rule for him that anything that has been said should not be said again. So again, so here are some situations, some more common than others, about prayer, about mental illness and the synagogue and prayer. And hopefully we've gone through some case studies or some situations and how halacha would approach this. But hopefully you got a picture a little bit about how halacha understands someone suffering from mental health and the analysis. It's not just something that comes up in the 20th, 21st century and they're making it up. Like I knew that it comes from the Gemara and the Rishonim and the Poskim. And this is how it's applied to nowadays. I think the issue of mental health has become I think there has been a shift in terms of post-com understanding or appreciating more types of mental health as being the status of chola, physical. I think there's more of an acceptance of that. But the notions of a shota, of a peti, this is well documented. This is already since the times of the Mishnah, and times of the Gemara. And we're just simply applying these principles to modern day situations. Anyway.